From NPR News, I'm Tony Cox. On today's show, Malcolm Gladwell, author of The Tipping Point, discusses his new book, Blink, The Power of Thinking Without Thinking. Also, we celebrate the life of civil rights activist James Foreman. And finally, we'll catch up with Carl Lumley, currently flexing his acting muscles in ABC's hit series, Alias. But first, crisis and hope in Sudan. With the public eye still focused on the tsunami-wracked coastlines of South and Southeast Asia, less attention is being paid to other humanitarian crises around the world. One place in particular is the ongoing genocide in Sudan's western Darfur region, where more than 70,000 black farmers have been killed by Arab Janjaweed militias and 2 million more displaced. There is, however, some good news in the region. This past weekend, Sudan's Islamic government signed a peace deal with southern rebels, halting a brutal civil war. Later, we'll get an analysis of the treaty and its humanitarian implications from Sally Booker, Executive Director of Africa Action. But first, with an up-to-date, on-the-ground perspective of the Darfur crisis, we are joined now by Michele Cecere, team leader of CARE, which is providing food, water, sanitation, and other services to displaced people in Darfur and across the border in Chad. He joins us now by phone from Niala. Welcome.
Thank you.
Save the Children has pulled its relief team out of Darfur for security reasons, and Secretary General Kofi Annan recently suggested that the violence in Darfur could soon escalate. Is that a real concern from where you stand? What do you see there?
Yes and no, in the sense that up until about 2 weeks ago, violence and fighting throughout Darfur, but in particular around the urban areas and Niala, especially, had intensified to very high levels to create some sort of buffer zones around these urban centers and to push out the SLA. In the last 2 weeks, there's been relative peace and stability. There could be different reasons for this. It could be because the government of Sudan, together with the militias and the Janjaweed, have achieved their objective of pushing the SLA out of these areas. It could also be because of the heavy blow these rebel groups have taken, and that they are basically regrouping because they haven't been wiped out. Basically, they move around quite.
Are you finding that other agencies are going to be pulling out? And as I understand it, CARE is staying. And if that's the case, why are you staying?
Yeah, no, CARE is staying. And that's the answer to the first question is negative. No other agencies are pulling out. We believe that it was probably what happened with Save the Children was probably targeted. So although it is difficult sometimes to move around and to provide assistance, we feel that we are safe and our presence here is essential. So without taking any unnecessary risks, we feel we should stay.
Do you feel, or maybe you can give us a sense of how long you feel this effort will need to continue to try to bring things back to a sense of normality there?
If you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I would have said that things were definitely getting worse and it would probably take another 5 years. Now, because of this relative peace and absence of heavy fighting and because of the peace accord and this probably being linked to that, I feel that things could come back to a normality, at least with regards to the violence, within the next year or so, but it's going to take years and years to rebuild the livelihoods of the people of Darfur, and even longer than that to just bring that into perspective, basically.
Michele Cecere is CARE's team leader in Darfur. He joined us by phone from Niala. Now we go to Sally Booker, Executive Director of Africa Action. He recently joined us from NPR's Washington, D.C. Bureau, where I asked him to explain the recent Sudanese peace treaty and the civil war it will hopefully end.
Well, Sudan's civil war between the northern government and southern rebels is actually the longest-running civil war, not only in Africa, but in the world. It began in 1956 when the country got independence. Southerners, who were by and large not Muslims practicing African traditional religions or Christianity, felt they were being marginalized from the new government that was being established. And so they took up arms and fought from 1956 until 1972, when the first peace agreement was arranged. And that lasted for about a decade. But in 1983, the northern government imposed Islamic law on the entire country, and the southern rebels took up arms again, and they've been fighting ever since until the signing ceremony last Sunday. The war was really a struggle of southern Sudanese for self-determination, to resist the imposition of religion on their communities, and to demand access to national resources, particularly oil. Sudan is a newcomer to the community of oil-exporting countries, and most of that oil is, in fact, in the south. So part of this agreement means that the northern government has agreed to share these oil resources on a 50-50 percent basis over the next 6 years. And at the end of that six-year period, there will be a referendum, and southerners will be able to vote on whether they want to be an independent state or whether they want to remain part of a unitary Sudan.
All right. Now, on paper, this treaty has little to do with the crises in Western Sudan, particularly in the Darfur region. But politically speaking, does it have an impact on what is occurring there?
It certainly does, but it's not self-evident which way it'll cut. The optimistic view is that this North-South peace agreement is going to help broaden a process of democratization in Sudan. Part of the agreement requires that the government in Khartoum give up 30% of all government positions to the southerners. And so there's going to be a change in the government, if you will. And also there will be a lifting of the state of emergency. Political parties in the north should be allowed to operate more freely again. There should be more space for freedom of the press, for freedom of speech and assembly. So this optimistic view argues that there's going to be a broadening of democratic trends as southerners join this government of national unity, and that they'll be more predisposed to ending the violence in Darfur and reaching some political settlement, even arguing that the North-South agreement could provide a model for a Darfur political agreement. The more critical analysis suggests that the government of Sudan, by ending the war with the South, can now concentrate its military power and other force on the Darfur region in its continuing efforts to crush not only the rebels, but the civilian communities that the government of Sudan has been responsible for decimating over the past 2 years in what constitutes a genocide.
But that's the question. That really is the question, isn't it? I mean, Secretary General Kofi Annan recently filed a report with the UN Security Council suggesting that, in fact, groups in Darfur were amassing arms and violence could soon intensify, actually, perhaps spreading beyond the border. So the question is, will the government do anything about it? And secondly, why hasn't the UN come down more strongly against the government?
Well, certainly the facts on the ground are that the conditions are worsening in Darfur. The World Food Program has had to suspend food deliveries because of a deteriorating security situation. The non-governmental organization Save the Children has pulled out of Darfur, and thousands of people continue to be made homeless. There are already 2 million people internally displaced in that region who've lost their homes and are living in squalid camps. So in the immediate sense, this peace agreement does nothing to provide protection to the people of Darfur, which is what they need immediately. And the peace agreement actually could be distracting attention from the genocide and the need for the international community to act. Now, the UN Security Council has been unwilling to take stronger action, in large part because two of the permanent members of the Security Council, China and Russia, have deep vested interests and relationships with the current government in Sudan. China is the largest investor in the oil industry in Sudan, and Russia is the major arms supplier to the Sudanese government.
So with the attention of the world also being focused on South and Southeast Asia with the devastation from the tsunami, it would seem that the situation may in fact get worse with regard to attention, dollars, and support heading towards Sudan during this time.
Well, that's certainly true. There's been an outpouring of sympathy and resources to help the survivors of the tsunami tragedy in the Indian Ocean. But this only highlights the sort of traditional neglect given to African humanitarian crises, whether natural disasters or man-made, such as the conflicts in Sudan. But the other problem here is that a focus just on humanitarian assistance in Darfur, i.e. the provision of food or shelter or water or blankets, is inadequate. What's really required is security. And by simply focusing on humanitarian aid, it allows many countries to wash their hands of the more difficult job, which is to have some kind of political and military involvement of the UN to make sure that this genocide is stopped.
What about the African Union? What position has it taken, and how actively has that body been engaged in trying to bring some sort of stability to this region?
Well, the African Union, to its credit, negotiated the ceasefire between the government of Sudan and the rebels in Darfur in April of 2004. Now, that ceasefire has largely been violated. Next, the African Union sent a small force, only 300 soldiers, to observe that ceasefire. And again, the size of that force was inadequate. And so by the end of 2004, they agreed to increase the force size to 4,000, but they only were able to transport 1,000 troops there, mostly Nigerians and Rwandans, and the United States and other countries provided the transportation. I think the sad thing is that it's well known that the African Union, as a young organization, simply doesn't yet have the capacity to mount the kind of intervention that's required. And yet, by embracing this slogan, African Solutions for African Problems, it allows the other countries, the West, the Security Council, to sort of wash their hands of responsibility for acting to stop this genocide.
Sally Booker is the Executive Director of Africa Action. He joined us from NPR's Washington, D.C. Bureau. Sally, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Tony.